Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's EHS podcast for the week ending March 20th. My name is Alan Nguyen.
And I'm Allison Granke.
And we'll be bringing you the latest news in environmental health and safety. So, Allison, I believe you have a story for us about poison prevention.
Yeah, so this week, March 16th to 20th, was Poison Prevention Week. So the goal of Poison Prevention Week is to raise awareness of the dangers of unintentional poisonings while also promoting poison prevention efforts. So it's estimated that about 10 million cases of poisoning occur in just the U.S. every year. Now, in the vast majority of these cases, around 80%, the victim is a child under the age of 5. So understandably, a lot of the awareness that is typically raised focuses on young children who may get into medication or household cleaning supplies that they shouldn't. The elderly may also be at risk if they accidentally take the wrong medication or misread directions and take too much. However, here on this podcast, we like to focus on worker safety, and so we thought we'd just take this opportunity to talk about workplace poisoning hazards and how workers and employers can prevent incidents from taking place. So workers in many industries come into contact with a wide variety of chemicals that would not be found in the typical home, and in many instances, these chemicals can be very dangerous. For this reason, it is hugely important that workers understand the properties of the chemicals they're working with and how to work safely with those chemicals. Employers need to ensure that workers have access to material safety data sheets, also known as MSDSs or just SDSs now under the new globally harmonized system of classification and labeling of chemicals. Of course, providing access to these safety data sheets is the law in many countries. However, this week is a great reminder to think of educating workers on chemical handling procedures as more than just a check to put in a box. So workers need to have a clear understanding of the risks of interacting with different chemicals and need to understand the reasons behind the handling procedures in order to grasp their importance and prevent cutting corners when it comes to chemical safety. It's important to remember that poisoning can occur in many different ways. So ingestion is certainly one of them, but many toxic substances can be inhaled or even absorbed, particularly if the appropriate PPE is not used. So of course, different industries are exposed to different poisoning hazards, but here's one example. Some construction workers need to work carefully to prevent lead poisoning. Exposure to lead can occur in workers during abrasive blasting, sanding, cutting, burning or welding of bridges, and other steel structures that are coated with lead-containing paints. Now, lead poisoning occurs when lead builds up in the body, often over a period of months or years. It doesn't have the same kind of instant poisoning effects that you might see if a child swallowed something from a household cleaning cabinet. But in many ways, this type of situation is even more dangerous because the lack of awareness can mean that preventative measures aren't taken or treatment isn't provided until it's too late. Even small amounts of lead can cause very serious health problems, and at very high levels, lead poisoning can be fatal. And initially, lead poisoning can be hard to detect. So people who seem healthy can have high blood levels of lead, and symptoms typically don't appear until dangerous amounts have accumulated. Luckily, the risk of poisoning can be significantly reduced with the use of engineering controls and appropriate work practices, in addition to the use of personal protective equipment, such as respirators. Now, that's just one example, but there are many of other types of poison prevention activities or protection equipment that workers should be aware of if they are working with dangerous chemicals. So, if you're a worker and you're concerned about the chemicals you're working with, take control of your own health and safety and ask to review the safety data sheets. And if you're an employer, this may be a good time to review your policies and procedures for training workers on chemical handling and ensure that chemical data is appropriately addressed in your safety management program and integrated into safety assessments such as job hazard analysis. If you'd like to learn more about chemical hazards in the workplace, see the resources section of this podcast where we've provided a link to a page on OSHA's website that addresses this topic. So, Alan, you've got a story for us on a new mobile app identifying safety data?
Yeah, so the Federal Motor Carrier Administration, also known as the FMCSA, has released a smartphone app that will allow for more convenient access to current online performance information on interstate truck and bus companies. The app is called QC Mobile and is expected to be used as a tool for state and federal law enforcement, as well as insurers, brokers, and freight forwarders, and other interested in reviewing the U.S. Department of Transportation's registration and safety performance of carriers. QC stands for Query Central. The FMCSA said it wants to increase transparency and improve road safety by making current safety data readily available to everyone. The U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox was quoted as saying that safety is the Department of Transportation's highest priority, and they are committed to using every resource available to ensure the safety of travelers. So currently, law enforcement and safety inspectors use custom software to log into a national database to check safety information on truck and bus companies. The QC mobile app will not require a login and can bring up the federal operating status of a carrier to expedite an inspect/pass decision by a certified commercial vehicle safety inspector. The app receives its data from a number of FMCSA sources and provides a summary of the results. It also has options to retrieve more detailed information covering a carrier's 7 behavior analysis and safety improvement categories within the CSA safety compliance program. The FMCSA emphasizes that it will still continue to use all the tools, resources, and partnerships available to further strengthen commercial vehicle safety across the country. After the FMCSA's announcement, the ATA, also known as the American Trucking Association, responded with objections to the organization's continued enabling of public access to CSA scores. And for those not familiar with CSA scores, it's essentially a safety and reporting measurement tool designed by the FMCSA to reduce highway accidents. The announcement of the mobile app was met with concern from the ATA over the quality, quantity, and consistency of the data used from the app. The ATA has argued that given the unreliability of CTA scores, it was inappropriate for the FMCSA to encourage public access and use of the data, and are urging the public not to use the application given the serious flaws in the CSA identified by the GAO and other organizations in the transportation industry. If you'd like to check out the QC mobile app for yourself, it is available for free on the Apple App Store and Google Play. And Allison, I believe you have a story for us about the U.S. oil industry.
Yeah, so there's been a tentative deal reached for U.S. refinery workers who've been on strike since February 1st of this year. Approximately 6,550 refinery workers were involved in the strike, and they came from 15 plants across 7 states. So that includes 12 refineries that represent about 1/5 of the nation's refining capacity. The striking refinery workers have been represented in these negotiations by the United Steelworkers Union, also known as the USW. They represent more than 30,000 American oil workers in total. So the last strike of this size, interestingly, took place in 1980, which makes this the largest refinery strike in over 35 years. And in fact, one of the main focuses of this strike has been safety, with many employees arguing that oil companies are prioritizing profits over worker safety concerns in some instances. Worker fatigue in particular has been a central issue, as many refinery workers report working 12-hour shifts for 30 days straight that leave them exhausted and in some cases making it difficult for them to work as safely as if they were at their best, which can potentially create dangerous situations. In fact, there is quite a bit of evidence that worker fatigue has contributed to safety incidents in the past. Worker fatigue has been cited as a contributing cause in the case of several explosions over the past decade or so, including an explosion at a Texas refinery in 2005 that sadly killed 15 workers. Following that explosion, the American Petroleum Institute developed a set of fatigue management guidelines that were intended to limit hours and days of work. But these guidelines aren't enforceable, and they're not overseen by OSHA, so they haven't had the impact that I think many workers and safety professionals were hoping for. Contract worker hiring practices were also a part of the negotiations of this strike. So, for example, there are some safety concerns around situations where outside contractors are brought in to perform maintenance, where many of these contractors are non-union and can often be less knowledgeable about the equipment than a regular full-time maintenance crew. However, oil and gas companies have questioned the union's motives during the strike, saying that the USW is less concerned with safety and more concerned with replacing non-union contractors with USW members. So last week, on Thursday, March 12th, the union agreed on a deal that would provide a national framework for contracts, and that deal outlines pay increases as well as an agreement to review safety and staffing levels, among other provisions. However, individual plants and refineries still need to work out local issues before ratifying agreements and going back to work. So it does look like we're nearing the end of this strike, but it still remains to be seen whether the results of these negotiations will have any long-lasting implications for refinery worker safety in the United States. So we'll keep our eye on that. And Alan, you're going to be talking to us about a new report on mental health.
So the Mental Health Commission of Canada, also known as the MHCC, released a report on workplace mental health issues back in 2013. The report was conducted by Dr. Martin Shane, found that employers have a legal duty to maintain not only a physically safe, but also a psychologically safe workplace under 7 different kinds of laws. Now fast forward 2 years later to the present day, where the MHCC has released a follow-up report by the aforementioned Dr. Shane. The new report, entitled Weathering the Perfect Legal Storm, discusses how to navigate requirements of the duty to provide a psychologically safe system of work in the context of the Voluntary National Standard of Canada on psychological health and safety in the workplace. The report covers standards such as CSA Z 1003/BNQ 9700, which is intended to provide systematic guidelines for Canadian employers that will enable them to develop and continuously improve psychologically safe and healthy work environments for their employees. The report discusses the fact that CSA Z1003 is a voluntary standard that hasn't been adopted by any jurisdiction into its OHS or employment standard laws. The application laws may indirectly impose a duty to provide a psychologically safe workplace on employers, especially to the extent that these laws bar harassment and bullying, and compliance with standard can help employers satisfy that duty. In addition, voluntary compliance with CSA Z1003 can not only help employers avoid legal liability for the psychological injury of workers on the job, but also benefit employers and the workplace with the following: health and productivity advantages, benefits to recruitment and retention of talent, protection of corporate reputation, and avoidance of conflicts, grievances, and disputes. And if you're interested in learning more about this report, we provided a link in this podcast. And that concludes this week's EHS podcast. If you're looking to learn more about any of the stories that we covered, be sure to check out the resource links in this podcast. And as always, thanks for tuning in.